Okay, reading from the Jivadharma chapter 3. Now kindly instruct me about Jiva Tattva. That's Lahari Mahasai. Om Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Aksur Mulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupakada Mayam Dadati Sapadantikam Pancha Kalpa Tarupyascha Kripa Shindu Bayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasade Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from greetings from Govardhan Hill. As I said, my desk in my room faces, I'm sitting now facing Govardhan Hill. Maybe about 50 or 100 yards from me. And it's a place surcharged with devotion. And therefore, it's a place with people surcharged with devotion. So it's quite a wonderful experience to be here by Govardhan Hill. And within a week, I'll return to Vrindavan for maybe a week, some people coming, some of my Iranian friends are coming, wonderful people. I'll show them Vrindavan. Then I'll go back a little bit for the Govardhan retreat, and then stay in Vrindavan for December, and Mayapur, Puri, Mumbai, and back in February for Vrindavan. So, this is this brilliant novel by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where he describes people coming to Krishna consciousness the generation after Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and their enlightenment in the association of great Paramahamsa Vaishnavas that are living in Navadvip on the island of Godrum. And in those dialogues of enlightenment, you systematically get the tattvas, the subjects, the sciences, the subjects of Krishna consciousness. So today we'll enter into one of those dialogues. And because it's quite philosophical and we only meet once a month, once a week, and then some people less than that, I'll kind of sum up what's happening. This Lahari was a aristocratic materialist, a kind of a smart Brahmin, they say, you know, ritualistic type. Brahmin would tend to be either materialistic or it would tend to be materialistic, actually, and impersonal sometimes. So he gets faith from the association, and he's changed, and he actually even starts to live within this probably bucolic ashram. And just envision what it is, you know, so lush and green. And by the answers of his questions by one Vaishnav Das, previously Sannyas Thakur, he gains faith, trust in the authority of Vaishnav Thakur, his lineage, and the Siddhanta, the spiritual conclusions that he represents, because he's feeling the result of an expansion of consciousness in their association. So, you know, he asks questions to allay his doubts that are particular to his own previous experience and learning, which is also a beautiful aspect of Jiva Dharma. The tattvas or subjects are systematically introduced, the whole gamut of Krishna conscious philosophy. But through the enlightenment of various people who, by their life situation, have a challenge to understand a particular tattva. A materialist may have the difficulty of understanding, I'm not the body. The impersonalist may have a challenge in understanding the personal nature of God. So, according to these various personalities, we get enlightened ourselves. So, he asks a question. He wants to know what is the difference, because he's hearing about Vaishnava Dharma. What's the difference between that and Nitya Dharma? There's Naimittika Dharma and Nitya Dharma. Naimittika Dharma is a duty one has, but it's temporary. It's based on one's situation, which will change. And when the situation changes, then the duty will change. You may have one duty as a student, then you're in a position of a teacher, and you have another duty. One life you're a woman, you have certain duties. One life you're a man, you have certain duties. When you're young, you have certain duties. When you're old, you have certain duties. When you have a social position, you have certain duties. When you have another social position, you have other duties. So, he wanted to know if Vaishnav Dharma is actually the Nitya Dharma. And Babaji Maharaj gives a very systematic, scholarly answer, which is also a opulence of Jiva Dharma. At Bhaktivinoda Thakur, although he's so deep in devotion, he's so scholarly. He can put things and break them down in such contextual understandings that they become easily understood. So he said, first you have to understand what kind of Vaishnav Dharma you're talking about. Because Vaishnav Dharma, there are various types. And one is pure love in the five types of relationships with Krishna. And another is impure. It's mixed with something else. either it's mixed with karma, where Vishnu is subordinate to karma. Vishnu is used, the worship of Vishnu is there, but the conception of that worship is mundane, and the objective of that worship is material. So it can be mixed with karma, or it can be mixed with jnana, that you can worship Krishna, Vishnu, Narayana. You can worship them to attain nivishesha brahman, impersonal liberation. And then he makes a very interesting point, which is connected, that there's three types of tendencies. Or tendencies is more or less, it's called pravritti, but it's kind of like what your faith is. And some people have a tendency to worship Brahman. Some people have a tendency to worship God's immanence as it manifests in the heart, as the Paramatma. And some have the tendency to worship the personal form of God, which is called Bhagavat Pravritti. And that tendency to worship the personal form of God, which is really the full admittance of the superiority of reality, he's going to explain that. That when you have the tendency for Brahman, you're attracted to moksha or liberation. When you have the tendency to worship Paramatma, you want subtle material pleasures in terms of mystic powers. But when you have the pravritti or the tendency for Bhagavan, it's a tendency that manifests out of love. When you acquiesce to a conception of reality where you are part and meant for service, while those with the Paramatma Pravritti worshipping they want to control the world. And those with Brahman Pravritti, they want to be the world. And those with Bhagavan Pravritti, they want to serve reality. They want to serve the world. So he hears this and he just feels, wow, I'm in the association of an elevated soul, and let me take instruction from him. Let me get some siksha. So, the first siksha in any path is a conception of what is its reality, what is its means of realizing reality, and what is the goal of all of this. So, similarly, there's three principles in understanding Vaishnava Dharma. Sambandhigyan, the conception of metaphysics, Krishna and Krishna's energies, Abhidhayagyan, the conception of practice, which is bhakti, and Prayojanagyan, the conception of the result, which is pure love of God. And so he begins to explain, and a Shuddha Vaishnava, one who practices pure Vaishnava Dharma, is one who acts according to these principles or ideas, one who has the right conception, who has this conception of reality, he can perform. If you don't have this conception of reality, if you have another conception of sambandha, reality is illusion, or reality doesn't exist, reality is, reality is without distinction, or reality doesn't exist, or reality, you know, and you don't, when you practice, again, you can't worship. You can't have pure. So then, there's a little discussion, why do you need this knowledge? And he says, it's obvious. It's essential for devotion. Because unless you have the right conception, you won't have the right objective. And if you don't have the right objective, you won't have the right practice. You won't be able to perform Shuddha Vaishnav Dharma. Because it's a result of the right conception and therefore the right objective. According to your conception, you have an objective. You have the wrong conception, you have the wrong objective. He's saying here that, yes, and if you have the wrong objective, you have the wrong practice. So how, if you have the wrong conception and the wrong objective, how can you have the right practice? And bhakti is not just the practice, it's the intention of the practice, which is to please Krishna. And if you don't believe Krishna exists, or you think Krishna is material, what is the question of that intention or inclination to serve and love God? Can an atheist be a devotee? Can an impersonalist be a devotee? Can a voidist be a devotee? No. So, there are three aspects of sambandha gyan: God, the living entity, matter, spirit, and matter. Maya tattva, jiva tattva, Vishnu tattva. So he explained Bhagavan tattva. And that was there in the text, and including in that all-pervasive, all-powerful, all-inclusive controller of reality, that principle doesn't have the defect of impersonality. It has a form. So he explains the principle of Bhagavan. So, I guess, sambandha gyan, to have that metaphysical conception of reality, you have to know God and his relationship with the living entities. And Maya, And that's Sambandha-tattva. The relationship of the jivas and of matter with God. And the relationship of God and of the jivas with matter. And if you don't, you can be a pure Vaishnava. So it's absolutely essential for pure devotion. We've discussed that. And of course, Lahari has a little difficulty with understanding how God, who's limitless and all-pervading, how he can have spatial considerations. So he explains, and anyway, it's so beautiful. We went over that before, that the sky is limitless. That doesn't make the sky God. But it's an attribute of God, and so is the attribute of God's form. And therefore, no entity can compare to God. And the impersonal conception is only one aspect of Bhagavan. And the Vaishnavas don't have faith in the superiority of God as formless, for it's opposed to their eternal function and their unalloyed love. So he explains Bhagavan Tattva. And it's such a subtle point that he explained that although you need to have an understanding to worship God, the understanding is not sufficient to actually fully comprehend the nature of God. But it opens one up to the experience of God, and therefore the recommendation for Lahari is to have that experience. Simply chant Sri Nam. And that will ultimately dispel one's doubts. And that's understanding. And that's how bhakti works. One of the main verses in the Chatur Shloki Bhagavad Gita is Tesham Satati Yukdanam Vachitam Pratipurvakam Dadami Buddhiyogam Twamya. One who worships me with faith and love, I give him the knowledge. The verse before is Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Matat Sarvam Pravartate. Iti Bhutva Bhajanti Maham Buddha Bhava Samavita. I am the source of the material and spiritual worlds. The wise who know this engage in my devotional service. So you need the knowledge to engage in devotional service, but you need the devotional service to have the full realization of God. One who worships me with faith and devotion, he gets that knowledge, how he can actually understand God and have a full relationship with God. So you have to have that knowledge, but if you want to have the sound understanding, then you have to practice. You have to practice. So Lahari understands this tattva. And now he wants to be instructed about jiva tattva. So today, basically, we'll just read and I'll have a little commentary on jiva tattva. So he answers, Sri Krishna has innumerable potencies. One of these is the tattvastha shakti, the marginal potency, from which issue the entities who are eligible to wander, sometimes in the chit-jagat and sometimes in the jadaka-jagat. So they're tattvastha. Like, and tattva means the shore. It's the shoreline, and the shoreline is sometimes dry and sometimes covered. As the tide comes in, it becomes water, and when the tide comes out, or mud, and it becomes sand. So in the same way, the living entities are tatasta. They're situated on the water. So sometimes they are spiritual in the spiritual world and sometimes in the material world. He goes on, the jivas are chit paramanu by composition, which means that they are paramanu, atomic entities of pure consciousness, chit. So they're atomic particles. We are atomic particles of consciousness. These jivas can be bound in the material world because they are tiny. But since they are constituted of pure consciousness, if they simply acquire a little spiritual power, they can also become eternal residents of the spiritual world and obtain paramananda. So it's like a spark. If it's connected to the fire, it has the full potency of the fire. And if it's disconnected, it becomes extinguished. It's dependent on its connection. So we're particles of consciousness. We can blaze with full chit, full spiritual consciousness, or we can lose that. And there are two types of jivas. There's mukta, they're liberated, and vada, bound. The jivas who reside in the spiritual world are mukta, liberated, whereas those who are shackled by maya and attached to this material world are vada. So there are two types of jivas. There's liberated and bound. And now there are two types of bound. Those who are spiritually awake, udit vivek, and those who are spiritually unconscious, anudit vivek. Birds, beasts, and human beings who do not seek their supreme spiritual benefit are spiritually unconscious, whereas human beings who have adopted the path of Vaishnavism are spiritually awake. For no one except the Vaishnav generally endeavor to attain the supreme goal. This Vaishnava means that acceptance of Bhagavan, the acceptance of a reality greater than oneself, and the acceptance of one's position as servant of that reality. One second, me with the discussion. So therefore, only because that's what spiritually awake means. It means awake to reality. And the Vaishnava conception of reality is that God is great and we're an insignificant part of God. That's what Vaishnava means. So only a Vaishnava can be awake for that, because only a Vaishnava wants that. For no one except the Vaishnavas generally endeavor to attain the supreme spiritual goal. That is why the Shastras have declared that serving Vaishnavas and associating with them is the best of activities. Those who are spiritually awake develop ruchi for the practice of Krishna Nam on the strength of their faith in Shastras. And from this, they easily develop an attraction for serving and associating with Vaishnavas. However, those who are spiritually unconscious cannot awaken their faith in Shastra and thus do not adopt the practice of Krishna Nam. They only worship the deity of Krishna as a matter of social custom. Consequently, the taste for associating with Vaishnavas and serving them is not advanced, awakened in their hearts. Lahari. Now explain Maya Tattva. This little part will go on a little bit more, and I'll have questions. So Babaji says, Maya is the material function, is the potency of Krishna. This potency is known as the Apara Shakti, the inferior potency, or the Bahiranga Shakti, the external potency. Maya remains far from Krishna and Krishna Bhakti, just as a shadow remains distant from the light. Maya manifests the elements earth, water, air, sky, mind, and intelligence, the 14 divisions of planetary systems, and the egoism by which one identifies the material body as the self. So the false ego is an element kind of that somehow attaches to consciousness and delimits that consciousness to a particular material situation. Both the gross and subtle bodies of the Bodhijiva are products of Maya. When the jiva is liberated, his spiritual body is untainted by matter. The more he's ensnared by Maya, the more he's diverted from Krishna, and the more he's aloof from Maya, the more he's drawn towards Krishna. The material universe is created by the will of Krishna just to facilitate the material enjoyment of the Buddhas. It is only a jail and not the eternal residence of the jivas. Lahari. Master, now please tell me about the eternal relationship that exists between Maya, the jivas, and Krishna. So I'll stop here. Are there any questions?
Hare Krishna,
Hare Bo.
Hare Krishna, it's Hanan, obeisances. I found the point that you made about the false ego interesting. Can you expand about it, that when we get caught by false ego, our consciousness kind of...
Well, there's three parts of the subtle body. There's the manas, right? And the manas identifies things and ascribes an understanding and a feeling to it based on past samskaras. Then there's the intelligence, which ascribes meaning to things based not on past experience, but based on knowledge and understanding and discrimination based on shastra. And then there's the ahankara. And the ahankara takes all this and ascribes some kind of identity. And literally, I read this in studying the Yoga Sutras, that at the end of our life, we have an unlimited amount of samskaras. An unlimited amount of samskaras we have, according to our past lives. Unlimited, you know, impressions in the consciousness, and karma, I should say karma, for this, for that, and that. So in the next life, according to God's plan on how we'll be purified, we get a particular body. And the nature of the most subtle of the material elements, which is the ahankara, it somehow or other acts as a funnel by which... Otherwise, how is your consciousness limited to the body of an ant? Or how is it expanded to the body of an elephant? And then there can be cosmic consciousness. That's why there can be a certain type of material omniscience. When someone is not bound by the false ego, his consciousness can expand. You can even read other people's minds. You can understand so many things. Does that help, Anon?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Thank you for explaining that. I'm thinking about myself and how in certain situations I get influenced more by the false ego. And I see how my consciousness...
Interesting, isn't it?
It's very fascinating. Thank you, Maharaj.
Yeah, and then it becomes a nationality, a gender, you know. Yeah. Anybody else like to ask any questions? Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. This is Gail.
Gail, Hare Krishna. Thank you again for coming on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you know, some days we end a little bit early. I guess today will be one of those days where we end just a little bit earlier. It's also a codicy. It's Dwadasi here. So it's time to break my fast. So if you excuse me, I'll end the class a little 10 or 15 minutes early. Thank you. Thank you.